The committee, the Heritage Finance Committee, will come to order. If members can come and take your seats. Chairman Yaros has asked me to fill in today due to illness, and I'm happy to do that. And I have gotten my vice chair manual, everybody, so nobody panic. We don't have a quorum yet, but we're going to go ahead and start with testimony on House File 779. Let's see. We have two bills today, and we switched the order. Representative Morrow has a bill that he's hearing right at 4 o'clock, and so he'll be later, and Representative Bly will be up first with House File 779. Representative Bly, do you have any...
Well, first I'd like to move the bill.
Yes,
and,
let's
move the... Ask that it be passed and referred to the Finance Committee.
Very good. Representative... Bly asked that House File 779 be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee. Did you have any author's amendments?
I do have an amendment, yes. It happens to be a delete all amendment, and I believe that there are copies in the folder.
I'm learning that document control is a critical legislative skill.
The amendment is A070049.
Representative Bly, why don't you move the A70049 amendment to put the bill in the shape you'd like it to be in?
Okay. I'll move the amendment, the delete all amendment, to A070049 to replace the current language.
Very good. Representative Bly moves the A70049 amendment to House File 779. Any discussion to the amendment? Hearing none. Sorry? Oh, I don't think we even have a quorum to do that yet, do we?
No.
I'm going to have to hold off on that. Representative Bly, could we start with some of the testifiers?
Yes. That's fine.
We could just accept it as an author's amendment.
Representative Bly, could we accept that as an author's amendment there to your bill, House 77?
Please do.
Very good.
Yes, I'll say a little bit about the bill, and that I'd like to have the testifiers who are here come down and join me if they would like to. I believe you have a list of them, but it's John Papar of the American Indian Policy Council, Becky Bean, director of Oshoye Nandaki Gaden Early Childhood Language Immersion Project. I hope I didn't murder that too badly. But, Lila Gugulai, director of a Native American Child Care Center. Betty Jane Schaff, Curriculum Specialist with the Language Immersion Project. Neil McKay, Instructor of Dakota Language at University of Minnesota. Yvonne Light, Director of a Family Language Nest Program that uses a master-apprentice approach. And Arnold Kingbird, Ojibwe First Speaker. And Lillian Rice, a trilingual Ojibwe Elder. And this bill creates an Office of Indigenous Language within the Indian Affairs Council, as it's written now. The purpose of the office is to support programs that promote the preservation and revitalization of indigenous Native American languages. There are other things that we will have to, related to the bill, that we'll have to take before other committees to get approval on. But it's quite encompassing, and I think that you'll find the testimony will show the worth of the bill. I got interested in the bill primarily because of my being the vice chair of the Early Childhood Committee, and I really think that this holds out a great promise for helping Native Americans close the achievement gap, and I think we'll hear some testimony that will bear that out. So would you like to begin?
Very good, Representative Bly, and would the testifier please identify yourself for the record and let us know who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Prupart. I'm the president of the American Indian Policy Center. I'm an Anishinaabe from Lac-Da-Flambeau, Wisconsin, originally, and I'm here on behalf of the Dakota Ojibwe Language Revitalization Alliance, of which I am its facilitator. And it's a group that meets on a monthly basis, focusing on the preservation of our native language here in Minnesota. I'm here to offer my support for this legislation. I've been in St. Paul for 50 years, To put that in proper perspective, that would be one-tenth of the time that the Europeans have been here in America. So it's all relative. I remember as a child that the native language was spoken by most of the adults in my reservation. And to just allow you to see what has happened over the years with our language as it has been diminished, and we've lost a great deal of it. My older brothers and sisters spoke the language to each other and to the parents. When it got to my age level, they spoke English. There was a reason for that. They didn't want me to see the same kind of punishment that they faced for speaking the language in the Bureau of Indian Affairs schools and in churches around the reservation. So over the years, it's diminished. Now my experience is that it's rare when I run across someone who is well-schooled and versed in the language. So our efforts is not only just specifically the language, but as the language is associated with our culture, our traditional oral history, whose content is the legends and the stories, the sacred songs, our ceremonials, and most importantly, our spirituality is conveyed in oral history fashion from the old generation to the younger people. It's always been this way, as they say, since time immemorial. We wrote nothing down. All of our knowledge was contained through the word of mouth, and this is why today we still remain committed to our elders and show them the utmost respect. Today you're going to be hearing from people from around the state and the region here who are in support of the restoration, the revitalization of our language, which has been dying out at an alarming rate. I will curtail my remarks now so that the others can join you in sharing their experience and information with you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Thank you very much. We do have a quorum present. If I could just interrupt for a moment to approve the minutes from the meeting of February 12th. Would anyone like to? Representative Johnson moves that we approve the minutes of February 12th. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? The motion passes. The motion is adopted, and we'll move on. Yes, Representative Kahn.
I suggest that you put the bill and then you put the author's amendment on the bill.
Very good. Now that we do have a quorum, Representative Bly, could you move your bill with the author's amendment, and we'll
no,
get that
I think
on. I'm sorry? Okay. Yeah, we did. Well, we did move it, but. Okay, so we do need to take a vote on accepting the author's amendment. Very good. Members, I'm learning my manual this afternoon. We would like to take action on Representative Bly's motion to have the author's amendment incorporated into House File 779. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so we have your bill in the shape. The motion passes.
Okay. Go ahead, testify, identify yourself.
Okay. Pardon me. My name is Becky Bean, and I am Muscogee Creek. My husband is Dakota, and I have five children, and they are speakers of the Dakota language, outnumbered in my household. I'm the director of the Wichoye Nandakikanden Language Immersion Program, which is a project of the Alliance of Early Childhood Professionals. We are located at three child care programs, and we have two kindergarten sites in the Franklin neighborhood in Minneapolis. I want to just speak about the importance of the language, first from a personal basis. As I mentioned, my children are speakers of the language. We moved here 3 years ago from California, and the reason we did is because our daughters wanted to learn the Dakota language. They did not grow up with the language. They chose to move here specifically to go to the University of Minnesota because of the Dakota language program. And they said it changed their lives. One daughter said, in fact, it saved her life because of knowing the language helped her know who she is. I have 5 points to make, and they're all brief, but they're all critical. First point is, it's the native child's right to learn their own language. It belongs to them. It's also the culture, the spirituality, and the values within the language. You cannot separate those things from the language itself. When the child learns the language, they're also building more synapses or connections are developed in the brain. In an immersion setting, these synapses and connections in the brain help the child also in an English-speaking classroom setting. Research shows that children that are learning a language generally perform at higher levels in a classroom, higher levels than their counterparts, you know, because of this. An example would be there's a measure that we use in early childhood. I have a master's in education. I've worked in the early childhood field for about 34 years. And there's a measure that is used called IGDIS. It's the Individual Growth and Development Indicators. They are performance measures that reflect children's progress. And they reflect children's progress toward general outcomes in areas such as communication, movement, motor skills, social competency, and problem solving. I used the same IGDIS process when I was teaching kindergarten in Oakland, in California. And when a child is using the skills in language, they learn at a certain level. But when the child is using that part of their brain in the other classroom setting, in the English-speaking classroom, their brain is already wired so that their brain is wired to such a level that they don't have to work as hard. Their brain is already working at such a level that they are learning more at a faster level in the other setting. And the recent test, and we have another speaker here who will probably address that at a more extensive level than I will. But our scores shows that children in our Wichoye project scored nearly twice as high as others in that were not in the language classroom. The third point I want to make, that we need to begin early in the language pathway in order to become fluent speakers and to become lifelong speakers. 11 years is recommended. And we began at age 18 to 22 months in order for the child to become a fluent speaker. But they need to speak and be in a language classroom setting for an average of 11 years in order for the language to stay with them for life. The fourth point, we need teacher preparation at all levels of education in order to lend support to our children to secure academic achievement that includes the knowledge of their languages. We need people in education that will be able to teach the children, and to be able to teach the children that will appreciate their language and help incorporate the language into their educational setting. Number five, research shows that students who know or who are learning their languages have a greater success rate in school. It's the most important and effective school readiness strategy for our Native American children. It helps their self-esteem. It helps improve overall school performance at all grade levels, including reducing the dropout rate. We have a 57, and that's a low estimate, dropout rate of Native children. Learning their language helps the child to find a balance in living in two worlds, the native world and the non-native world. It helps them with living in two cultures, and we strongly encourage you to support this effort. Thank you, Padami A.A. McGwich.
Thank you very much. Representative Bly, would you like to have questions for each witness, or for each testifier, or just
we could do that if there
there's any questions.
I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well, hearing none, we can move on.
Who's next?
I have a Layla. Thank you. If you could state your, or welcome to the committee, and please state your name and who you're associated with for the record, please.
Hey, good afternoon, committee. My name is Betty Jane Schaaf, and I am a member of the Native American Leader Circle. I also work with the Preschool Language Immersion Program. I'm here today to speak on behalf of the Native American Leader Circle. It is a group of early childhood educators that got together, I believe, in 98. And what we did as a group is look at early childhood issues in our community, in the Native American community. We held a conference in 2000 in Mille Lacs, and we got community members together, tribal elders, educational people. And what we got from them was loss of language and lack of curriculum were the two most important things that our children needed. So as a group, we decided to work on the issue of the language and the curriculum for the children. One of the things that we found out when we started this was that there was language being taught in high schools, there was language being taught in the communities, there was language being taught in elementary schools. So we thought if we could get them early, they would get that language more and they would be able to retain it longer. One of the things that we found is starting in the Native American, in the early childhood field, they must have it going into the next level. They must have it going into elementary. They must keep having it in high school. What we're finding now is it's hard to make sure that they're getting that next level once they leave our program and getting into another program so that they can continue getting the language. So one of the things we need to do is find a way for these children to keep on going. Since we've been in the program, we have lost a couple of children due to the needs of funding to keep them in the program. A lot of parents can't afford childcare so they can be in our language immersion program. We need to find ways to keep these children in the programs. It shouldn't be brought on the parents because they can't afford that their child cannot learn the language. It shouldn't be a matter of money. It's really important that they get the language all the way through their whole education instead of just a little bit here and a little bit there. It doesn't go a long way that way. One of the other things that we're finding is that there are parents and other people out there that have foster children and children that are not with their native families. These people have come to us to find resources to try to teach those children about their heritage and their culture because they're seeing the importance of it. So not only is it the native community that wants their children to learn the language, it's also other people that want the native children to learn their languages. So I don't know, we had one other Native Leader Circle member up here, and I think she had a few words that she would like to add.
But we do have a question from Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's Betty Jean Schaaf.
Schaaf. S-C-H-A-A-F.
You say that the younger age groups, I'm taking kindergarten or pre-kindergarten and first grade, maybe second grade, are doing the languages now, but as they get into third, fourth, or fifth, that can't happen. But if that's not happening, where is it being taught? Is it being taught in the schools during the school day, or is it after school? Because you mentioned something about having daycare provisions for these parents, and is that something I'm wondering if it's being taught then after school so that the parents then have to come and get the kids after school or before school? If you can give me some enlightenment as to when this happens, I appreciate it.
Michelle.
There's actually a lot of programs that are going on throughout the state. There are some after-school programs. There's some programs that are going on during school, but they're getting minimal language. They're spending minimal time on that when they could be spending more time on it. So there are elementary schools that have language class the children go to. They have language and culture time. There's high schools that have language and culture classrooms. So there are language and culture classrooms out there, but they're not getting enough of it. And the kids need to be able to go from one program to another program to another program. Did that kind of answer your question?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Schaaf, so when is this being done? If it's done during the school day, then they're only getting a minimum amount, and you're suggesting that they should stay after to get more, and in order to do that, they need funding for daycare providers so that their parents, the parents can have their kids someplace else so that they get more of this language, and then it's spread out over the whole entire first through sixth grade scenario. I'm not following. If it's being done in school now,
excuse me, if I could.
Representative Bly.
Chair and representative, I think this proposal is to try to make it possible so that wherever, large enough amount of number of native learners were in a school, a language immersion program would kind of follow them through so that it would establish that that experience could happen throughout their school experience. They could partake in a language immersion program.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bly, but it is happening right now already.
It's happening in very limited fashion and not in the immersion model that's been talked about.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Anderson,
Representative Bly, is it just kindergarten, first grade that it's happening right now, that they're getting this introduction to the languages and then it stops, or what?
That is the only immersion program that is going on. There's only early childhood immersion programs going on, and we would like that to go up into the elementary age and up into the high school age. Right now they're doing some teachings, but it's not immersion. It's not all language. It's just a little bit of teachings here and there. And unless it's done fully, they're not going to be able to retain it.
So, Mr. Chair and Mr.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Schaaf, how is it being funded now?
Ms. Schaaf.
I'm guessing that the schools are just providing these classrooms. Ours is being funded by an ANA grant and some other private funding. And the other program that is an immersion program is up at the Buganagujik School on Leech Lake, which is a Native American school.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kahn, I believe, had a question.
Yes. I'm sort of interested. I know we met before the bill was, before this amendment was drawn up. What do you see the structure of the Grants Advisory Board, and how many people do you see serving on it? And how would you, I see that you've, you know, each Minnesota Indian tribe is going to select this tribal representative. Do we need to put anything about the structure in there? And my question is also, and I don't know if you said this and I missed it, what sort of appropriation are you looking for?
Representative Bly, did you want to take that one?
I don't think that we've exactly determined what the appropriation is that we'll ask for. I'm going to let Margaret Boyer speak to some of the questions that you've asked.
If I could interrupt for a second, Representative Bly, I did talk with staff this afternoon on all the stops that this bill will take, because it's kind of got lots of different pieces in different places, and it also doesn't have a fiscal note on it, and so the parts that come out of the Heritage Finance Committee were not clear on yet, but we didn't want to necessarily stop the bill from stopping an E-12, and I think the Health and Human Services Committee even either, so...
Sure.
We do have a fiscal note that has been requested and will be available. I just found that out. Representative Kahn, you still had a question that you were looking for an answer for.
Besides
and
that, I just wondered if anyone had any thoughts about that. How do you see the Grants Advisory Board working, and how do you see it meeting, and how do you see?
And if we have somebody new here, if you can introduce yourself and who you're associated with for the record.
My name is Margaret Boyer, and I'm with the Alliance of Early Childhood Professionals, and I'm also assisting with the Dakota Ojibwe Language Revitalization Alliance. And as far as we know, the only immersion, there's a big difference between a language class, like taking French, the way you would take that class versus immersion. the only way to save the language is creating an immersion pathway, and it has to be immersion, and it needs to start in the earliest years. The only ones that we know exist right now, there's one up at in Net Lake. Leech Lake has, I think it's pre-K through second or third grade. They have immersion in Mille Lacs, and the one that we have in Minneapolis. Those are the only immersion programs. There's less than 15 fluent Dakota speakers left in the state. And you hear different numbers and we heard that there's less than 50 fully fluent Ojibwe speakers. So the only way to save the language is to be very strategic in how you fold it out. You can't give money up here for a higher ed class and money down here for a pre-K class and money over there for a K-12. You need to create these pathways. So that's what the council would do, would be very strategic. And what we were thinking of is that every tribe in each of the four major urban communities that have a large Native population, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Duluth, and Bemidji, would each start out with one pre-K immersion class. And then that we would start every year, this is how they did it in Hawaii, adding then a kindergarten and a first grade. Each year you would add one more class so that you have a full pathway starting with when the brains are geared for language. So that's what the council would do. And for who would be on the council, it would have an... I think we would give that task in the bill, as in the amendment, gives that task to the Dakota Ojibwe Language Revitalization Alliance to create a grants committee that would give grants then, working with the council in a very strategic way. Because unless we only have 10 years to save the language, if we don't do it in the next 10 years, and every year, every week, another elder dies, we have to start immediately. We have to do it right away. We have to create the pathway, and it has to start with the youngest kids. But they need to be able to minimally have language for 11 years so that it sticks and it's part of them. Or we're not going to have... This is the homeland of the Dakota and Ojibwe language. If you're French or German, you can go to the country and learn the language. If you don't learn it here, you know, this is where you learn it. This is the home of that language.
We had Representative Johnson, and I see Representative Ornis and Representative Dean have questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this is to Representative Bly. As I look at the bill, it looks like it's, if I understand the intent, it's oriented towards establishing this office that can then serve as the coordinator of providing the kind of education and learning opportunities for American Indian children. And you need someone to help coordinate this whole process throughout the state and through our different schools and so forth. And it isn't to fund a K-12 learning experience immersion school, but rather you really need someone to get the programs out there and decide what the priorities are, how to implement it, and so on and so forth.
Well, yes, and I think that in my understanding of it, I think it's really important that, and I'm actually very proud of the fact that this is something that's come forward from the Native communities. And I think that that's what we're looking at, is how can they interact with our education system in a way that benefits them the most. And as we look at trying, there's all kinds of talk about narrowing that achievement gap, and I think we've failed at being able to do that in a number of ways. And I'm really proud of the fact that I think this is a way that they've come, that the people have come forward to say, we want to solve this problem in our own way. And I think it's very, very honorable. And it does make it somewhat complicated in working through the process of creating a bill, because you also want to honor all the various parties that have some say and some interest in seeing it happen in the fairest way. So if that answers kind of your question, that's right. I also might mention that, you know, in 1988, there was an American Indian Education Act passed that really asked that schools provide this kind of education in a way, but it didn't really go to Native people and say, how can we best do this so it meets your needs? And my hope is that we can still accomplish that by doing it in conjunction with working with Native people. Could I ask that we return to the testifiers? Is that a possibility? Is there time to do that?
Maybe I could ask the representatives on this side of the table if they had something specific for this testifier, or did you want to have other comments at the end of the presentations? That's fine. Representative Dean has something specific.
If we do have other testifiers, and if you just do have a chance to perhaps walk through the bill itself, we'll probably have a lot less confusion on it, so we'll just move ahead then.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative Dean. We also have another bill, and I want to... Okay. Do you have another bill with someone from out of town, too? And I just...
Okay.
We have an evening session at 6 o'clock, and
we'll try to be observant of our time.
So I think if we could wrap this particular one up by 4 or 5, that would be great.
Thank you.
Do we have another testifier who wants to speak to the bill?
I have a Mr. McKay.
Yeah. Neil McKay.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and who you're with, that would be great.
My Dakota name is Ironheart, and my English name is Neil McKay. Can you fill us up now?
No, I can't read here.
Well, I wanted to talk about the need for... I teach Dakota language at the University of Minnesota. I've been teaching language now for 7 years.
Okay, if you sit closer to the mic, that would be great.
Okay. Is this better?
Great.
I've been teaching Dakota language and American Indian history at the University of Minnesota, Twin Cities campus, for 7 years now. And along with the Ojibwe language instructor, we've been producing speakers of the language. We've taken students who have little or no background in Dakota or Ojibwe language, and we're able to produce proficient speakers, meaning they can hold a conversation. They could go and teach at a basic level if they wanted. One of the challenges that we have right now is we do not have an official teacher training program, which would certainly come under this bill, certainly come under supervision. We really need a teacher training program to get our teachers accredited, get their credentials, get their licensure, specifically to teach Ojibwe and Dakota in an immersion setting. I think I might be repeating some of what was said before, but with immersion, Margaret Boyer stated earlier that it's different from language class. Okay. With immersion, instead of going to English, or instead of going to math, science, language class, history, you do all of that in the language. Okay, so if we have that, and it's already starting it with kindergarten in the Twin Cities here, but we need support, we need more training to get these classes up to par, to get the curriculum. Curriculum is always a constant challenge. But again, from my perspective, having a teacher training program is sorely needed. It's much overdue. And like I say, we are already producing speakers, but they don't have the credentials. They don't have the proper licensure. But if we could put together something like that and make it official.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. McKay? But don't go away. We might have something later.
Okay.
I had a Layla Google-Eye.
Lillian Rice is here, if I could call her down.
Certainly. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record, please, and who you're with.
My name is Lillian Rice. My Indian name is Kamakwe, and I belong to the Otter clan. And I'm a first language speaker, Potawatomi. Second language is Ojibwe. My third is English. And I think I'm more... I'm better at speaking Potawatomi than the other two, but bear with me. To tell you a little bit about myself, I've been in the helping profession for the last 25 years, and one of the things I've been real active in doing is helping people to reconnect to who they are, and that's relearning the language and the culture. And then recently I started working for Four Directions, Reuben Lin program. Yeah, I've been there for 5 years at the daycare. And I started off by creating my own curriculum because we didn't have anything. And then I got involved with the Early Child Leaders Circle, helping to... becoming involved in this language immersion program that we have at the daycare now. And I'm a Ojibwe speaker there. I work with Brendan Fairbanks and also one of the staff people, Eileen Stan, and the three of us have been working, been in that immersion part for a year. And we've seen some real good results. We have one child that's been in there with us the whole year. And we've seen this child developing into a very strong little person. He's learning the language. And I've seen it start to make a lot of difference in the children that we are working with. I'm also an elder in the community around that area, and so that keeps me pretty busy. And a lot of it has to do with who we are as Native people, and that is our language and our culture. A lot of our ceremonies, a lot of everything that we do, you know, it has to do with the language. And without that, we're lost. And I've seen that over and over. Last night, being asked to go to do a funeral, and again there, having to use my own language in the ceremony that we do. Right now, sometimes I feel like I'm in a very hard place because there are not as many of us that speak the language that are able to do, to perform the things that we do, the ceremonies and everything that mean who we are, our prayers. All of our prayers are done in the language. People don't know their language. They're just kind of, they're lost. it's real hard. But one of the things that really brightens my spirit is that there are a lot of people that are interested in relearning the language so that they can do the things that that were taken away from us. You know, I listen to people's stories. I've listened to testimonies. People talking about how they felt about not having their language, how they felt lost without it. And I also talked to a lot of people that have gone through government schools. And in fact, I was married to a person that went through a government school. And he talked about the things that used to happen to them because they dared to speak their language, the punishing that went on. You know, there are horror stories out there that I listened to over the years that I worked with people. But the one thing that has happened and wished I'd have been, I just started documenting all the stories that I heard so that I would have a better presentation to present to you at this time. So.
Thank you, Ms. Rice, for... Were you finished?
If anybody has any questions.
Any questions for Ms. Rice? And thank you for articulating your testimony in your third language. I don't have a second one, so. any other questions? Well, thanks very much. I had two more, Representative Bly, and then if we could do a walkthrough of the bill, that would be great so that we can get all questions answered. I had a Yvonne. Please?
I think the other testifiers were unable to make it, so
oh, okay.
These are all that we had. So.
Well, very good. Representative Bly, if you could do us the favor of just walking through the bill and the sections, and just if you could, as I look through it, I can see a lot of different committees that are going to want to look at this. And my understanding is the Indian Affairs Council structure is what is funded under this committee. Fire away.
The beginning of the bill describes the establishment of this director and a commission of community groups that would oversee and kind of plan what Margaret Boyer called the pathway for immersion, and I think that there are many aspects. Of what might be, I suppose, be called a vision of how this all could work, but we're starting from a place where none of those really exist in their fullest form. So we kind of need a group to oversee that or help us formulate where to begin. As we go before the various committees, and there are such issues as the establishing the early childhood programs and also creating a way for the language to be disseminated to other teachers to also be able to teach that, and certain challenges like how do we get beyond the No Child Left Behind rule for teachers to be licensed in a certain area when there really isn't a licensure for these kinds of languages. So we're going to have to find ways to work our way through some of that to allow the various things that we want to have happen. There are, in addition to being kind of various parties who have interest and influence on what that committee might be, there are a variety of ways that we would look for funding as well. So I think in the description of the bill, it mentions that general funds might come from the Indian Affairs, the Council, Department of Education, the Office of Higher Education, Department of Human Services, and so on. And you know, as you're looking at the different pieces of how this might work together, it gets sort of complicated to sort all of that out. And we're still working with the various parties and also the research department to make sure that we get the language right. And there are some questions that we still have that we haven't completely answered. But I guess in a sense I have to. Ask that you will have faith that we are working towards those the answers to those questions as we encounter them, and I welcome your questions if you can help us kind of fine-tune some of these, the issues of questions about how the grants might be ranked or determined, how they would go to various groups and all of that. But I'm not sure that I've really made it more clear by my brief explanation or not, but I'm challenged by that. I know we have a limited amount of time, but if you have further questions about how this might work, please ask.
See, I had Representative Nornes, Dean, and Erdahl. Representative Nornes, would you like to go first?
No, I think that my question had to do with, you know, the Concordia College language camps serve a lot of different nationalities. And I was just going to ask the question whether there is any American Native American languages included. I don't know if anyone even knows that, but
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question.
Goodbye. Could have you go and sit and reintroduce yourself there. Reintroduce yourself, I'm sorry.
Sean Gardner, Representative. I had earlier. I'm Harlan LaFontaine, also with the Dakota Ojibwe Language Revitalization Alliance. And just to answer this question, I did talk to the Concordia Language Group earlier. In pursuit of can they introduce some Ojibwe Dakota languages there, and they thought it was a good idea. But to answer your question at this time, that they hadn't really moved on that. So,
just wanted to find out because I know it's a tremendous program, and it's growing and expanding. So,
right. Yeah. Thank you.
Very good, Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Lyon. Thank you for bringing this bill forward. Obviously, from the testimony, it's something that is very important that we maintain the indigenous languages from Minnesota and also share them with current and future generations. So I think it is something that's very important. And just kind of going through the bill, I had a couple of questions on basically how this is going to function, what it is, and what it does. First of all, how many, just in terms of, I see the Dakota Ojibwe Language Revitalization Alliance in Section 2. How many indigenous languages are there in Minnesota? And, I mean, are there?
That's a great question.
In fact, I'm sure you have that at your fingertips.
I'm gonna ask that, please.
Yeah. You could just
John Kupar, testified earlier.
Yep.
The two largest nations in Minnesota are the Chippewa, or call them Ojibwe or Chippewa, or Anishinaabe is their real name, and the Dakota, the four Dakota communities, commonly known as Sioux communities. So there's two major camps of language in Minnesota.
Okay. But there would assume, Mr. Chair, there would assumably be other indigenous languages of lesser population, or would you say 99.9% of Native Americans in the state speak one or the other?
Mr. Brubart?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I think that's a good estimation.
Okay. Mr. Chair and Representative Bly, I was wondering, the obvious definition of where the what this is going to do and where the money is going to come from and where it's going to go, the clearest separation that I see is what goes into K-12 through the Department of Education through appropriations and what does not.
Mm-hmm.
And assuming that you're going to probably go before K-12 finance,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
That issues of licensure in Section 2 specifically dealing with developing in 2.12 multi-tiered system for native speakers to be certified on special status by the Board of Teaching seems to me to be a very specific thing that
right.
probably will be dealt with by
yes.
lots of teachers on that committee. So I'll kind of separate the K-12 portion from what I would assume would be the purview of this committee.
Sure.
And just kind of ask the question, are there existing sources of structure that this might already be done in or could be done perhaps within outside of this. Two come to mind. First, the Commission on Minnesota Ethnic Heritage, which was proposed by Chair Yaros in an earlier bill, which is charged with implementation of preserving the cultural history and language of the state, was kind of described to us. I'm wondering if we might be, if that might perhaps be a better place for this, perhaps so that we could do one commission and not a second one. And the other one was a question of the Midwest Alliance of Sovereign Tribes, which is a five-state group representing 134,000 Native Americans, charged with protecting the cultural, religious, and language resources of all Indian people within that boundary. And if these folks are perhaps doing the same work or could be using, leveraging more federal dollars than creating another Minnesota government program, perhaps this one is already doing it, and as time is of the essence, perhaps that might be, did you think about or talk with those folks about what they're doing and what their successes are?
I did not personally talk to them. Excuse me, Chair Gardner and Representative. I did not personally talk with them. I do not know if Harlan has looked at either of those organizations, or if John, if you have a
Mr. Poupart.
No, as a facilitator of the Dakota Ojibwe Language Revitalization Alliance, we have had no contact with MAST. I know I'm quite familiar with the organization. As far as I know, they haven't had an initiative with indigenous languages. That's not to say that they couldn't have it, but I just have no knowledge of their being involved.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Gardner, last question. Have you approached any of the tribes about perhaps interest in directly funding or grants or appropriating funds for the program?
Again, I haven't. I don't know if others have. I would just say, though, that I think that this is an effort that I think takes more than just a piecemeal kind of approach, and I think it would be hard to just sort of pawn it off to one tribal group or another. I think that it's a commitment that the state ought to have if they really are serious about closing that achievement gap, so to speak. And as to your earlier question, too, which didn't get answered about the bill that Representative Jaros has introduced, I don't know if you were here, but I did ask him about the appropriateness of that question. And the impression that I had was it wasn't really a complete match. It didn't really fit into the same kind of approach that bill was taking. And the other thing, I guess, that it's been impressed upon me is that I think it's important for the Native American groups to feel ownership of what's happening here in conjunction with working with the state. So I hope that answers that question. As to the other question about individual tribes, is that been done?
Mr. Chairman, it's John Poupart again. This is one of the things that we are concerned with at DOLRA. DOLRA is just an acronym for Dakota Ojibwe. And this is one of the things we were concerned with in part of what prompted our action on this particular piece of legislation, is that we knew that across Minnesota there were a variety of initiatives, from Language Nest to immersion to higher education to high school, and we just were not having any coordination in any method to how we would advance the language. So we set ourselves in the middle of this and say, okay, we're going to take charge at this point, and as we move along, we will relate and communicate and coordinate our affairs. It's a very, in my view, it is a simple piece of legislation at the onset, but it does get complicated with the various departments involved. You'd mentioned that I just wanted to reflect on someone's comment about the 1988 Indian Education Act. I was a part of that 1988 piece of legislation. I was opposed to there when the 1972 Federal Indian Education Act was inspired earlier by the Mondale and Kennedy field trips throughout the country. And for countless years, we've tried to do something with our Indian education. And in some places, we've made some gains. But overall, we are still faced with the dropout issue, the low graduation rates, the low test scores, high absenteeism rates, and tardiness rates. So these kinds of things will get at some of the cultural, the personal kind of buy-in to education from Indian children and families. I just thought I'd reflect back on that just a bit while I had the opportunity. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Representative Erdahl has been patiently waiting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Bly, as all of us are aware, the governor has been highlighting second languages, other languages in his program as well. I commend you for the emphasis on early age immersion, which I think is important and more effective than high school years, for example. But a couple of questions. One, has the governor's office or the Department of Education been involved in this at all?
Representative Bly?
Not directly with me, but again, I'll ask if there's knowledge of direct. John?
Excuse me, would you repeat the question? I'm sorry.
Just wondering, Mr. Chairman, what, if any, involvement you've had from the governor's office or the Department of Education?
We've had discussions with the Department of Education, with the Indian Education Director, who is, I think, is still here. And she could better answer that question than I. Yvonne Novak, who was in charge of Indian Education at the state. We haven't had any conversations with the governor's office, no. Not that I know of, unless others have, no. But we haven't been talking with in an education office.
Is there, Mr. Chairman, is there someone?
Was there somebody from governor's office or the Department of Education, did I hear, who could speak to that? You could state your name for the record and tell us who you represent.
Good afternoon. I'm Yvonne Novak. I manage the Indian Education Programs in the Minnesota Department of Education. And with me is...
Good afternoon. My name is Karen Ballmer. I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Board of Teaching.
All right. Fire away, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering if there's been any contact or what your position is on this.
Again, Chairman, Representative, I have spoken with the group. At this point, there's no fiscal note on the bill, and there is language concerns from the department about the bill. And Indian Affairs has not, I believe, voted on the delete all. And they said their executive director told me that there were some issues that they would be working out. So at this point, we're just here listening.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Erdahl?
Ms. Ballmer, any comments from you?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, Yvonne and I have been in contact. I have not had any direct interaction with folks outside of the department about this bill, but we look forward to some good discussions. We are, at the Board of Teaching, very interested in supporting the preservation, of course, of indigenous languages, but have some concerns and questions about the language that we see before us. So at this point, we've not been involved, but we really look forward to that partnership as this moves along.
Mr. Chairman, one more.
Representative Alda, I know when I had a bill in a committee, someone cited rules about making sure that, you know, education stuff is discussed in education committee, and heritage finance is in heritage finance, but I want to make sure you get your question in.
Thank you. Just ask if there's been any consideration of the Council of Indigenous Language that the Board of Teaching or the Department of Education be included in that list. I guess Representative Bly or the testifiers, any opinion from either?
Ms. Novak.
Chairman, at this time, no. I would like to add, though, that there is a language and culture credential in the state of Minnesota on the books for people who wish to teach either Ojibwe or Dakota or one of the other indigenous languages of the area, and that the University of Minnesota Duluth is in the process of creating a Ojibwe teacher language program, and in fact that is now being presented to the Board of Teaching for approval. And it is a program that will credential the person both as a teacher and as an Ojibwe language speaker. So there are some programs. And currently the state also, through the Indian Education Act of 1988, supports a teacher training program and a grant called Success for the Future, and language, not in the immersion form, but in classroom form, is done through the Success for the Future program.
I know Representative Anderson had a question, but in the interest of time, if we do have questions related to the Department of Education, I'd like to have those questions asked in the Education Committee, and we can stick to issues related to the Indian Affairs Council. Representative Anderson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a little confused. It talks about Indian Affairs Council, then it talks about the Office of Indigenous Language, and then it talks about the Governor, the Grants Advisory Board, which is acts in the same capacity as the DALRA. And I'm just wondering, there's really no makeup, I think Representative Kahn alluded to that, as to the makeup of how these things work and how they are going to function, who's going to be on the boards, and particular members that are going to be on the board. So I'm kind of confused as to why there isn't more specifics in the makeup of these things, and what hierarchy do they go in place. Is the grants board, because then it talks about a director reporting back to the grants advisory board, and yet it sounds like the director is from the grants advisory board. So I'm a little confused on the whole process of the way this is made up, and I just like some clarification.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'd like to call upon Margaret Boyer to come up and testify a little bit on that. But I think it's, unfortunately, I'm sorry that it's still kind of a work in progress, and those are concerns that I have as well that we will try to get answers to.
Ms. Boyer.
Chairman and committee members, we originally created the concept coming out of the Dakota Ojibwe Language Revitalization Alliance was an independent council of indigenous language that had a makeup of 33 members. Funding would come from the different departments involved so that they could strategically give the grants. But then we were asked if we would put it under the Indian Affairs Council. I think Representative Yaros really wanted to put it under the Indian Affairs Council instead of having it be independent. So we worked out a bill that would do that. It seems like going back to the original concept might... We're still in discussion with the Indian Affairs Council if they would like it to come under there. If they want it to go under there, that's fine with us. If they want it to be independent, that's fine too. And so that's why we had one bill and then it got changed. So some of the language might have gotten lost.
Representative Bly, we do have another bill that is, I hope, we can squeeze in here. I'd like to see if we could take action on this. I had one typographical change, okay, which I'm told does not require a vote, and I want to make sure we get that right. In your A7 amendment,
right,
which is now incorporated into the bill in line 1.2, it says pages 2 to 4, delete sections 2 to 5, and insert. And there is no section 5. It just goes to section 4.
Okay.
And, Representative Bly, would you be willing to incorporate that change into your bill?
Yes.
Does everyone understand the proposed amendment to make that typographical change? Okay. Representative Bly will incorporate that change into the bill, and we're back on House File 779. Members, as I said, I did talk to staff extensively on how to deal with this, because this is broken up into several different budget categories. Representative Yaros has pledged to bring this bill back with a fiscal note so that we might consider it for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Heritage Finance Bill for the parts under the Indian Affairs Council, rather than and sit on this bill, because there are other committees that have requested it, specifically related to the licensing and so on. I thought it would be considered to those committees to allow them to consider it and have thoughtful questions asked of people on this bill in those committees. Therefore, I would like to see if we could move on and vote to pass this. Are there any other amendments to House File 779? Okay. Any other further discussion of the bill as amended? Hearing none. Representative Bly, would you like to renew your motion that House File 779 be recommended to pass as amended?
Yes, I so move and refer to the Finance Committee. Correct?
Very good. Is there any discussion on the bill?
We just tried to. Okay. So this is a division, so we just send it back to Finance? It's not. Okay.
That's correct.
And then Finance sends it to the next. Probably another division in Finance. Okay.
Other discussion on the bill? Very good. If not, those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. House 779 is recommended to pass as amended and be referred to the Committee on Finance.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bly. Representative Morrow, let's get you squared away. You have somebody from out of town, and
thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm here on House File 692.
Now, Representative Bonner, my understanding is that you would like to have this bill under consideration for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Heritage Finance Bill.
That is correct.
Do you have any amendments to your bill?
I do not, Mr. Chair.
Thanks very much. Representative Ma, would you like to move your bill? I'm sorry. I do have to get a member of the committee to move the bill. I'll go ahead and do that and move House File 692 that it be considered for possible inclusion in the Heritage Finance Omnibus Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and
Representative Morrow.
Ben Leonard, the director of the Nicollet County Historical Society, and I will try to be very brief. This is a fairly straightforward bill. This bill would appropriate $150,000 from the general fund for work to be done on the center exhibit area of the Nicollet County Historical Society. The Historical Society of Nicollet County runs five sites, including the Treaty Site History Center. I'm going to turn to Mr. Leonard now to talk about the appropriation itself and the project.
Yes, my name is Ben Leonard from the Nicollet County Historical Society.
Thanks for saving me that time there.
Thank you for your time today, and thank you, Representative Morrow. I'd like to state for the record, too, that I have painted more fire hydrants in Chair Gardner's district than anyone else in this room. So, that being said, a few summer jobs painting fire hydrants in Shoreview. So, I have a brief statement that I'll read. The stammering you're going to get either way, but at least this way, hopefully I won't stray too far off course, and we can wrap this thing up as far as I'm concerned and have time for questions. You're getting a few handouts. I decided to shock and awe you with handouts rather than try and say everything that's either on those handouts or on my mind. So as you flip through those, I might reference those, but those should be coming around to you. Traverse des Sioux has been a gateway and a gathering place for thousands of years. At this place, named Ojuwege by the Dakota, was a shallow rocky place in the state's longest endemic river that allowed people to cross. Consider the Minnesota River, Interstate 94, and Traverse des Sioux one of the few off-ramps. This river crossing at Traverse des Sioux was made more important by the intersection of the Big Woods and Tallgrass Prairie, two of the state's three major environments. This made Traverse des Sioux a natural place, literally, for people to come together. And they did. Archaeologists working for the Minnesota Historical Society in 1998 unearthed 10,000 objects. Among them were two projectile points dating back 9 to 10,000 years, as old as the river valley itself. Later, the Dakota, and then the Europeans, traveled and lived there. All of this made Traverse des Sioux a logical place to sign the treaty in 1851, which became the Traverse des Sioux Treaty. Treaties between the U.S. government and Minnesota tribes began in 1805 and ended in 1858, but the Treaty of Traverse des Sioux was arguably the most important. It covered a huge area, 24 million acres, covering an area from present-day Winona to Moorhead to Laverne, and also including portions of South Dakota and Iowa. It covered parts of what now are the districts of Representatives Erdahl, Anderson, Bly, Aiken, Mador, Nornes, Peterson, and I believe a tiny portion of Carlson's district as well. This represented about 40% of what would become the state of Minnesota. The treaty had an incalculable effect on the Dakota Nation, on what we think of Minnesota today, and our state's place in American history. The Treaty Site History Center, headquarters of the Nicollet County Historical Society, was built in 2004, adjacent to the Minnesota Historical Society's Traverse des Sioux State Historic Site, which Nicollet County Historical Society currently manages. If you see the quick backgrounder form there, Representative Morrow already stated some of the facts. We do operate five sites. Two of them are ours. Three of them are state historic sites that we manage under contract management agreements. Those are Traverse des Sioux, Harkin Store, and Fort Ridgely. You see what our expected income and expenses are for the following year. And the Treaty Site History Center is located directly along the U.S. Highway 169 corridor that sees 23,000 vehicles pass each day. Our host community, St. Peter, is becoming increasingly populated, affluent, and educated. Unlike many neighboring communities, the school-age population is growing significantly. All of these factors speak to both the importance of the History Center and the opportunity to expand and accommodate a much larger audience. You'll also see that on the top there, it says that the Nicollet County Historical Society at its sites, programs, outreach, and services reached 50,519 people in 2006. A brief proposed budget is listed on the project summary. And I want to stress that this exhibit needs to be all things modern exhibits are: dynamic, factual, visually stimulating, inclusive, and interactive. This is a universal story. All residents and visitors need to be able to relate to it, whether they're an 80-year-old white retired farmer, a Dakota third grader from the Lower Sioux Reservation, or a recent Somali immigrant who just moved to St. Peter. And I'll close by just stating briefly four reasons why I'd like the committee to consider this appropriation. One, I firmly believe the Treaty of Traverse des Sioux was and continues to be incredibly important for all Minnesotans, especially residents and visitors to Nicollet County and the entire Minnesota River Valley. Two, the Treaty Site History Center is best equipped to tell this story. We, along with the adjacent MHS Interpretive Trail, are the site of MHS Interpretive Trail, are the site where history happened. We are located directly on the U.S. 169 corridor, just south of the Twin Cities metro area. The Nicollet County Historical Society also operates the other sites that I mentioned, which tie into that nice theme and then builds that critical mass of history that we're able to tell. Point three, this exhibit would dramatically improve our ability to tell the story and tell it in an effective and dynamic way to a variety of audiences. And four, without this appropriation, the project would not happen. Our organization is committed, professional staff is in place, and the public is extremely interested. However, we simply lack the funds. I heard it, this is just a joke, but I did hear in a Minneapolis city council meeting that it was said that the only thing that stands between the city of Minneapolis and a world-class water park is $50 million. And I'm here to say today that the only thing that stands between a world-class exhibit at the Treaty Site History Center is $150,000.
I'm glad you didn't say it was $50 million.
No.
So we'd have to table this one pretty quick if that was the case.
So that's my prepared remarks. I don't hesitate to offer any comments or questions or concerns that you might have.
Questions for Mr. Leonard? Representative Anderson and then Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Leonard, it shows on here on your background, or it shows that your expected income is a $307,000, expected expense $301,000.
Yes.
And you show some donations. Is this the donations is $17,000? Is that donations that you've already collected, or you're expecting to?
This is what we're expecting to collect. Oh, sorry. This is what we're expecting to collect for 2007. We operate five sites. It may seem like a big number, but spread among 18 employees, part-time and full-time, and five sites, we're operating a professional organization, and we're financially stable, but we're not financially wealthy.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Leonard,
Representative Anderson,
what have you collected in the past towards this project from your local community or from in the whole project?
This project really has its roots with the building of the Treaty Site History Center, which opened in May of 1994. And that was a $1.2 million project, of which the state contributed $150,000, I believe. And the lion's share of that came from donations from the community.
Any follow-up, Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Say that again. A lion's share of the $150,000?
No, the lion's share of the $1.2 million came from community sources of the building of the Treaty Site History Center, of which the Center Gallery is a part of. The problem with that is that my predecessors, to be frank, overbuilt at the time and couldn't pay for the center exhibit, so it never happened.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Leonard, how much did you actually collect of the $1.2 million that you needed?
We are currently debt-free on the building, so we collected all of it. We just became debt-free within the last year.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Dean had a question, then Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Leonard, how many fire hydrants did you paint again?
I painted quite a few.
Is that in Representative Gardner's district?
Yes. Representative Dean, I can say that there's some very happy dogs in Sharpeville, so you did your job well.
Right, maybe that's walking.
They're old dogs, and they don't see very well, so they're red.
It's been about 10 years, so they've probably been repainted.
Wounds have healed. All right. That's good. I'm glad to hear that. Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, if this was in Washington County Historical Society and they approached me with the project, I would probably first look at it and then talk to them, get a projection somewhat like this together, and then put it together in bill form and put it together for inclusion in the bonding bill. Mm-hmm. Why didn't you do that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, from my understanding, this is not a bondable project, as it's neither state nor public property, but rather it's owned by the Nicola County Historical Society. But I'll turn to Director Leonard to confirm that.
Mr. Leonard?
Actually, the property is owned by the city of St. Peter, and we lease it back. We own the building, though, but we do have a lease agreement, a 90-year lease agreement for the remainder of the lot.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, I guess that you, within the project that you've described here and its statewide significance that you've obviously shown with the coverage area and everything, I think it probably is bondable, and I would strongly encourage you to look at it in that way. I do think it sets a precedent that we shouldn't be going down to take what I would consider clearly bondable projects and put them through this committee, and would love to visit this on our statewide trip with Representative Kahn as we get on some wheels and travel around the state this summer.
I'll
Representative Erdahl as well.
Representative Morrow?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, thank you. I had a meeting with the Minnesota Historical Society, which I apparently did not understand then fully what I was advised when I proceeded with this bill, so I will look into the propriety of seeking bonding for this.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Morrow, I too thought that it seemed like it would be a bondable project, but talk with Representative Kahn a little bit more about this and we'll figure it out. Just so I do have it straight, what you're currently asking for, this money is from the general fund and to the Historical Society, the State Historical Society, and then it would be to you. But this is not Historical Society money per se. You would not be, you're not asking for money from their budget.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, no, I'm not. That is correct. I'm not asking for money from the Historical Society budget itself.
All right, thank you.
Other questions? Representative Kahn.
I would suggest on the issue of bondability that you go talk to Representative Hausman, Chair of the Capital Investment Committee. We had some discussions about the kinds of things that are bondable and not bondable. For example, furnishings are not bondable and technology is not bondable. So, you know, it's not completely clear. And the grant is for the Historical Society, even if the city owns the site. So it'd be, before you rush to put it into bonding, I would go talk to the experts on what's bondable.
Thank you, Representative Kahn. I will do that.
Mr. Chair?
Very good. Do we have Representative Lane?
Did you say that the city owns the land, but the private enterprise owns the building, which is seeking additional monies? Is that the difference?
Yeah, Mr. Leonard.
So there probably can't be bonding for the building itself, then, which is what is being sought for. So it would be a shame to just delay this.
We may have an expert witness.
Mr. Chair, if I might, and I'm we do have David Keller here, with whom I had a discussion about the bondability of the project.
Great. And the more concise and quick, the better. Could you please introduce yourself for the record and who you're affiliated with?
Mr. Chairman, David Kelleher. I'm the legislative liaison for the Minnesota Historical Society. My understanding is that if the building is owned by the Nicollet County Historical Society, a 501c3 nonprofit, then improvements to the building itself would not be eligible for bond funds. If the building itself were owned by a public entity, such as the county or the city, then they would be eligible for bond funds. But since that's not the case, in conversations with Representative Morrow, my suggestion was that this would be eligible for general fund appropriations. As to the question of whether exhibits are eligible for bond funds, Representative Kahn, if they're long-term exhibits planned to be in a facility for many, many years, such as we have at our historic sites, then we've used bond funds for those types of projects.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think, though, that the gentleman from Nicollet County just said that this is leased from the city, so the city does own it. Is that right?
Representative Erdahl, if I understand correctly, the city owns the land upon which the building sits and has leased the land to the Nicollet County Historical Society for a period of 99 years. The Historical Society itself owns the building upon the land.
Ben Leonard from the Nicollet County Historical Society. That is correct. We do own the building.
I'd hate to see the deed here. My understanding is that we can still lay this over for consideration in the omnibus Heritage Finance bill. If something does come to light that demonstrates its applicability for bonding, I think we can yank it out. And with that, I do not see that we don't have to take any action on it. But thank you, Representative Morrow. We'll lay that over for consideration in the omnibus finance bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Seeing no other business at hand, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.